Reaching young people with a pro-life message is our topic for this portion of Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and our guest is the Vice President of the Georgia Right to Life. Their website is grtl.org, and her name is Abigail Cochran. Abigail, it's great to have you on the program. Thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you, Jerry.
Sure. Well, first of all, give us an overview in terms of young people today and the abortion issue. And I understand, for example, let's say college students and then high school students. I mean, some of the videos you see, some people are really rabidly almost, you know, pro-abortion and so forth. It's like, wow, how do you change these hearts and minds?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're definitely living in an exciting time. It's a great, great time to be able to reach the younger generation. So I'm kind of like you. I used to think that everybody must be already pro-life or pro-abortion, and if they were pro-abortion, then, you know, they're probably like really, really, really passionately pro-abortion and sort of livid about it, and then it's hopeless, you know. I've since learned, though, that that is not the case. You would think that most of the younger generation are really strongly pro-abortion based on what you see on television, but in fact, the majority of people of all ages, I think, are actually somewhere in the middle. They're just kind of, you know, they would say it depends on circumstances. So in some cases, they would say, no, abortion shouldn't be legal, you know, and then and sometimes they would say it should be. And those people in the middle are the ones that our organization really targets, because those people can be successfully persuaded to think and vote pro-life when they're exposed to the truth. And that's our goal.
Yeah, you know, it is absolutely amazing to me that you would say that about the middle, because I've got to say this. I've been doing interviews for years with, including movers and shakers and so forth. I did a television interview with George Gallup Jr., you know, his dad founded Gallup Polls, and their office was in Princeton, New Jersey, and so forth. But George Gallup said this that I've never forgotten. He said, you know, I asked, is America pro-life or pro-abortion rights, you know, whatever. And here's how he said it. He said 20% of the population is strongly pro-life. 20% of the population are strongly pro-choice. 60% of the American population are in what I call the mushy middle. And a pollster could get, you know, a result showing that, you know, most are pro-life or most are pro-abortion rights, depending on what they ask and how they ask it. And you know what? I think the truth of that is borne out, you know, even to this day. And again, that was more than 20 years ago. He's been dead for about 15 years or so. So what is your strategy then to try and win minds and change hearts?
Yeah, well, you know, a lot of people are familiar with the three arms of the pro-life movement. You know, there's the pastoral arm, which includes pastors and pregnancy resource centers, and that really reach out and try to help people cope with the hurt of abortion. And then there's the political arm and the educational arm. Georgia Right to Life, my organization, is involved in all three, but we primarily focus on education. I believe Jonathan Van Maren, he really highlighted this well in his book, Seeing is Believing. He pointed out the distinct work of each of these arms, and he pointed out that the pastoral arm is usually the favorite of churches because of its less controversial nature. And then, of course, everybody's familiar with the political arm, and that one really works to ensure that whatever social consensus exists on abortion actually makes it into law. And usually people will think of one of those two arms and totally forget the third, the educational arm. And that one is where he says the tide turns for a nation or a state. It is the work of the educational arm that tries to change public opinion on abortion. And then by winning over people, those people that we've talked about who are in the middle, you move the social consensus toward hopefully recognition of personhood. And that's the goal of our organization. But we know that the laws changing are probably going to have to change the cultural view of the issue before the laws will actually change. And so that's the goal of the education arm.
Can you say again the name of that author of that book and what's the name of the book? I'm not familiar with that, but it sounds like it's worth knowing about.
Yeah, the author is Jonathan Van Maren, and the title of the book is Seeing is Believing. Jonathan is highly involved in the Canadian Center for Bioethical Reform, and he has been a very strong activist up there for several years.
How would you spell Maren?
M-A-R-E-N.
Oh, okay. Jonathan Van Maren, Seeing is Believing. Never heard of that. Okay, I'll have to look into that. All right, so what do you do?
Mm-hmm.
Do you go onto college campuses? Do you hold public discussions? Do you hold displays? I know in some cases some people come and they show photos, and then some people find those photos very offensive because they're showing, you know, like chopped up babies from abortion remains, you know, abortion remains.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we will go and set up on a college campus or even sometimes in the public. I think there's certainly a place for street activism, but the college campus is really a strategic target because you're dealing with people who are, we would say, abortion vulnerable. You're dealing with a demographic of young people who have an incentive to not want to raise a child at that time in their life and yet who are very likely to conceive. And so there's kind of a double purpose when you go to a college campus, because not only are you reaching the general populace, but you're reaching part of the population that is abortion vulnerable. So yeah, we'll go to a college campus, we'll set up a large display, and we'll use pictures. I think the pro-life movement is using pictures because we have such a visual culture. You know, people are so accustomed to video and to things that look nice.
Sure.
That is probably one of the best ways, especially if you're trying to reach the younger generation.
And so what are these pictures like? I mean, in other words, there's different versions of pictures. There's the graphic ones that show, you know, the remains, the chopped up babies, and then there's other ones that just show, you know, the baby inside the womb. But go on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we'll use both. We use the images of the beautiful baby developing in the womb. We have a whole panel on our display of prenatal development. And then we'll also use the more graphic pictures, and we'll use those with warning signs. So if people are especially sensitive, then they can look away or just avoid it altogether. But we feel like it's necessary to use both, because with the positive prenatal photos, you can prove that the preborn in the womb is a human being. But it's with the other photos, the very difficult pictures of graphic abortion victims, that's where you show them that abortion is an act of violence. And you know, Jerry, it's been amazing to me how many of the students will change their position when they see the graphic photo, and they'll say things like, wow, this really changes my perspective. Or they'll be kind of appalled, and they'll be like, oh my goodness, I had no idea it happened like that. And so what we'll do is we'll use those graphic photos, and we'll draw a comparison with other photos of things like slavery in American history or the Holocaust.
Yeah.
And we'll compare these as injustices that were legal at the time and were overlooked by the general population because they denied that the victim was a person.
Right.
And that's where we point out that that is exactly what's happening today with the preborn.
Yeah.
Because they're being denied personhood, they're considered property, or they can be treated however, with no rights at all.
Yeah, a couple of weeks ago, I write a weekly column, and I was writing about the anniversary of Roe v. Wade, and I looked at this one sentence from Roe v. Wade, which is something like 11 words, in which they said, basically, we're not going to address the issue of whether or not, you know, when does human life begin? That's not even going to be in our purview. You know, something to that effect. And then I looked at the Dred Scott decision of 1857, which you know, basically put its stamp on the continuation of the process of slavery. And they said that even a runaway slave or a freed slave is still not an American citizen, you know, under the Constitution. It said that, you know, in Dred Scott.
Mm-hmm.
And so in both cases, you had judicial activism at work. And in both cases, as you say, they dehumanized the human beings that were being killed, or that were being oppressed. Okay, so go ahead and give us a story or two. I imagine you yourself go on some of these campuses. Just tell us a couple of stories of what's actually happened and maybe some of the changed minds and hearts.
Okay, yeah. So let's see. You know, people don't always change their mind on the spot. And I'll say, I mean, for myself, it's hard for me to acknowledge when I've been wrong. And I'm a Christian. And so, you know, you can't always expect that they will right there in the moment change their mind. And so often it's after a conversation when the student's alone with their own thoughts and maybe their ego has time to recover that they actually change. But sometimes you do see them change on the spot. We had one young lady in particular that stands out in my mind. My dad spoke with her. I'm really blessed to have my family join me, and I get to do this as a family sometimes. But my dad spoke with her for a long time and discovered that she was post-abortive. That is, she had had an abortion previously, but she had never connected the depression and the guilt she was experiencing with her abortion until she had that conversation.
Oh, wow.
And it was after sharing her story and tears and sort of being guided away from justifying it. My dad says that she, at the beginning, was sort of justifying it, and she kind of acknowledged that abortion was wrong, but then she said, well, if I had it to do over again, I'd still have an abortion. And my dad pointed out to her that you can't have it both ways. Either it was wrong and you shouldn't have done it, or it was okay. And anyway, he pointed out that sort of inconsistency. And after their conversation, she was able to acknowledge it was wrong and seek God's forgiveness. My dad was able to tell her about Memorial, the Unborn in Chattanooga. And it was amazing because she thanked us for being there. And she wanted to give my dad a hug. And I thought, wow, how many people are there out there who are suffering and struggling from guilt and depression and don't even realize it's because of the abortion? But it's when we actually bring that to the forefront of a public discussion that, and we help them acknowledge that it was wrong, that then they can find forgiveness and healing.
And what are your legal rights or legal parameters when it comes to going on some sort of campus in order to, you know, make your display and talk to the students?
You know, we have the Constitution of the United States, which protects free speech.
Good point. of course, you know, though, that's funny, though, you know, I agree with you, of course, but I also, you know, I see all these different articles and, you know, professor in anger, you know, destroys pro-life, you know, little crosses or, you know, whatever. I mean, that's a story that's kind of repeated, that some of the angry pro-abortion rights people on college campuses, whether students or whether teachers even, sometimes will destroy these displays and you know, throw coffee on people or whatever.
Yeah, definitely. Many universities are becoming increasingly hostile to the pro-life message. And, you know, most of the time that's not the case. You know, it depends on what school you're at. So occasionally you will see things like that with somebody who really just loses their cool. But you know what I think is a scripture that talks about how a soft answer turns away wrath.
Mm-hmm.
And when we're on a campus, we try to make sure that we are responding with gentleness and kindness, and often you can just diffuse that emotion with a soft answer. If you don't take the bait and, you know, react and become very, you know, upset yourself, if you can diffuse that with a soft answer, then it can solve a lot of problems right there.
Yeah, you know, here's a thought for whatever it's worth. You know, as you put displays together, you know, you could almost put up a display with pictures showing here are prominent people who are pro-life or, you know, became pro-life that used to be in favor of abortion rights. And then you could have, you know, Roe, as in Norma McCorvey. You could have Doe, as in Sandra Cano. You could have, you know, you could have, there's all kinds of people, because people, this is an area where people are changing a lot of times because of guilt or whatever, or they see the sonograms and they realize the humanity of the unborn. Okay, we have 20 seconds left to go. GRTL.org. What would you like to say in conclusion? 20 seconds.
Oh, I would just like to say that I would encourage your listeners, if they want to become involved, we are building a coalition of pro-life Minutemen and people who are willing to put their convictions into action and establish justice for the preborn. So I would encourage them to go to our website, grtl.org, or if they're not in Georgia, to go to our national affiliate, personhood.org, Personhood Alliance, and connect with us on social media.
Okay, Abigail, thanks so much for being with us. Abigail Cochran. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Jerry.
Thanks. Bye-bye.